Right now. Yo, Jay, hit it. Let's go.
This speech is my recital. I think it's very vital to rock
a rhyme.
That's right.
On top.
It's tricky. It's so tight.
Here we go. It's tricky to rock a rhyme. To rock a rhyme. That's right. On time. It's tricky. It's tricky.
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 Hey everybody, this is Randy Withers. Welcome back to another edition of the Inside Slant podcast, where it is tricky. It is tricky to rock a rhyme. We have the whole crew back together for the first time in a long time because late night is coming up. Late night in the fog is this Friday. We have a road football game at Iowa State this Saturday. There's so much going on in Jayhawk Nation. It was only right that we brought everybody back in the booth. We're going to cover all the hoops and football news in this edition. We're going to talk recruiting, a little of this, a little of that. So it's only fair. We have to welcome Shay back first. Mr. Shay Wildebor, our man in the Allen Fieldhouse suite, the man on the Kansas basketball beat. Shay, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, man. I'm surviving another day. Just got back from Kemper's football game. They beat Shawnee Mission West 38-14. Baby, the Owls are rolling. The varsity team beat number 2 Olathe North last week, so life
that
is good here around the Wildebor house.
That was a surprise to me.
Right?
That was a huge shot across the bow in the Olathe district.
Yeah, and I was talking, there was a little carnival here tonight for homecoming, and I was talking to some of the varsity linemen, and they just said Olathe North, this was how they felt. They didn't feel that, Olathe North didn't feel that the Owls would come out and punch them like that for four quarters, and they said, man, by the time that fourth quarter rolled around, the Owls were ready to fly away, baby. They were feeling it.
That's awesome. That is awesome. One of my old friends, his son is a defensive end over there at Olathe West that has had a great start to the season. After missing the first game, he's played three straight and made three starts, and they are riding high over there. It's awesome to see that program making that kind of progress this year.
It's fun, man. I love the coaching staff from the freshman up to the varsity. Coach O'Neill is a really good dude. And the thing about them is that everybody gets the same individual attention. They're working with these guys, coaching them up. And it's been, as a father watching his son play, it's really been cool to see, man. I've really enjoyed it so far. It's been a good run.
That's awesome. That is really cool to hear. Now that we have talked about everything at Olathe West and everything with Olathe West football, let me bring in our man on the Kansas football beat, publisher of Jayhawk Slant, and my friend, Mr. John Kirby. JK, how you doing this evening?
Randy, I'm doing well, man. I do want to confirm, it looks like you are clear to go as a media member with Shay to late night, so you boys don't be getting in any trouble.
What?
I knew
he was going to, when Run DMC was announced, I knew Randy was going to find a way to get in. I just knew it.
Oh, the Kings of Rock. I mean, there is none higher. Sucker MCs should call me sire. Right. I was going to be at this show. Now, I do have to point out, Shay, there is one thing we have to remember. The last time we went to late night together, they're you know. It was what it was. Snoop was there and it was fantastic, but there were certain people that were a little uncomfortable. You and I, on the other hand, were literally having the time of our lives.
Dude, best concert ever. I mean,
oh, it was awesome.
44 years old, and it's the best concert that I've ever attended. I know it was controversial. We had the money guns and we had the poles, and but strictly speaking, from a concert standpoint, and everybody knew going into that what that was about. And if you didn't, you don't know Snoop. It was one of the top 10 moments of my life. I'll never forget where I was when Snoop came to Lawrence.
It was amazing. And that is still the the video clip that I tweeted out that is still getting hits. It's been viewed like 2 million times, literally. And it just kept going. It got picked up by all these different media outlets and everything. It just went absolutely berserk of the girls with the aerial dancing. You know, it was a very artistic display.
Absolutely.
There on the court at Allen Fieldhouse and Snoop and the crew. And now we get to see actual Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees, some of the greatest to ever have done it, guys that have had such an amazing impact on popular music and popular culture in this country, in Run DMC. And I, You know, I'm debating. I may have to bust out the black leather jacket and the white Adidas on Friday.
Kirby?
I may have
to do it. Kirby? Kirby?
Yeah.
Don't get me in trouble here.
Hey, you know what? I'll tell you guys this. I think I want to say it was last Christmas, and I don't remember what song it was, but Run DMC's got a Christmas song, right? And so
Christmas,
I mean,
and Hollis.
Christmas in Hollis.
Christmas in Hollis, 1987.
So
it's
see,
Christmas time in Hollis, Queens. Mama's cooking chicken and collard greens.
That's it.
So my that would have been my freshman year at KU. So it comes on. I don't even know what we're watching. It comes on. So I got my two teenage boys, and they're just like, "What's this?" And I'm going, I'm like, "Guys, this is what this is why you guys get to listen to your music now, right?" Because they're like, "This isn't rap." I go, "No. This started rap." these guys are why you get to listen to your rap. And you know, they're sitting here going, "What is this?" I told one of my sons, I said, "I remember hearing Snoop Dogg once say, 'If there were no hammer, there'd be no Snoop Dogg.'"
I told my sons,
"If there was no Run DMC, you guys wouldn't have the rap you listen to now."
Well, and I mean, think about it. I mean, some of the greatest ever, credit them for paving the way. I mean, you know, Jam Master Jay, God rest his soul. But I mean, there would be no 50 Cent if not for Jam Master Jay. Yeah, there wouldn't have been Nas if there wasn't for Run DMC. There, so many of the guys specifically that came out of New York and Brooklyn and Queens, we never would have heard of them if not for Jam Master Jay, Daryl McDaniel paving the way. I mean, Eminem inducted them into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for a reason.
Yep. Christmas in Hollis, Queens, baby, 19.
It was that song to this day, every time I hear it, it is that. I absolutely love it.
Yep.
Well, now that we have gotten everybody fully prepared and given some idea of the level of absolute hype that we have for Late Night in the Fog this Friday night, Shay, you know, it is the season. You know, we're talking Christmas and Hollis, so it is the season. We've got Late Night. What do you expect to see Friday night when we get into Allen Fieldhouse? I know it's more of a fun night than it is a hardcore basketball kind of event, but man, it's become such a staple of Kansas basketball. What are you expecting this Friday?
Well, I think first and foremost, I think you're going to see some normalcy. I think, you know, last year, due to COVID, obviously, there was no Late Night, or it was, but it was taped, and, you know, no fans in attendance, no Aerosmith Dream On video. There was nothing. So I think you're just going to see the guys, and they talked about that today with Christiane and David McCormick, met with the media, and again yesterday with Coach Self, just getting back to having fun, you know, seeing the smiles, seeing the laughs, seeing hopefully a packed Allen Fieldhouse, you know, allowing the student athletes to be student athletes. I mean, I think it was either Chris Tien or David McCormick made a good point today. Like, the guys in last year's class that were freshmen have never experienced Allen Fieldhouse at its full capacity. They've never really what Allen Fieldhouse is about. I mean, guys like Zach Clements, guys like KJ Adams, you know, there were no opportunity to visit during the season last year, simply because of COVID. They don't know what the atmosphere is like in terms of seeing it full hand. And I kind of get goosebumps just talking to them at it, because last year, it just wasn't the same. We were walking around with masks on, and I know we have to wear masks Friday. I understand that. But you know, we were all the media sat in the upper deck. You know, there was a couple thousand fans, and it just didn't have the vibe.
It just wasn't the same.
No, it wasn't. And you know, for me, Randy, it was like, even going to the games, and listen, Kirby's had me around for like, I think 20 years now, and it's been an amazing, unforgettable run. I'm so blessed to be in the position that I'm in, to have the job. But last year, I don't want to say I never dread basketball, but I knew walking into Allen Fieldhouse every game that it just wasn't going to be the same. You know,
exactly.
You didn't have that emotion. You didn't have that energy. You didn't have that passion, that excitement, that enthusiasm. And I think the game all around took a hit. I'm not just talking about at Kansas. You look at places like Duke. Kentucky was 9-16 last year. And obviously that had a lot to do more than just the fans being absent. But it's just the level of play wasn't what it normally would have been had there been sellouts at every arena. You know, had there been college game days.
College basketball is known for the passion of the fans and the ardent support that programs generate over generations of families. It's tradition that's passed down not just in the programs, but from fathers, mothers, and fathers to sons and daughters about the traditions within their families, and that's what Kansas basketball is. And when you take that element away from college basketball,
it's not the same.
Stripped away a lot of its soul.
Yeah. Yep. So I expect is just to see a lot of laughs, a lot of guys having fun. And you know, for 10 guys, it's going to be something new. It's going to be something that they've, you know, having never stepped foot on the Allen Fieldhouse court in this type of capacity, in something that kind of has an official feel to it. I mean, there's going to be guys that are, I mean, you're talking about Bobby Pettiford, Joseph Yosefu, you know, Kyle Cuff, who I don't think is going to participate tomorrow night. You know, you've got Remy Martin, you know, Zach Clements, KJ Adams. You got a Cam Martin, Jalen Coleman Lands. These are guys, newcomers, that have never stepped foot, you know, inside this type of, you know, this type of building.
I wonder how many of the new guys even know about, I mean, obviously they've never experienced it, but I wonder if the guys specifically that were transfers, if they're even familiar that this is a thing. You know,
I, you know what? That's a great question. I don't think so, because again, last year Jalen Coleman Lance played at Kansas last year and saw Kansas in Ames, but I mean, he didn't see what Kansas is all about. I mean, he got a very small taste. So I expect tomorrow to kind of be like a rebirth into Kansas basketball, simply in terms of welcoming the fans back, seeing the smiles, seeing the excitement and all those things. I know I'm looking forward to it, man. It's been a very long time since I've seen a game in Kansas in which there was meaning. And I know obviously tomorrow's not a game or Friday's not a game, but it's gonna have some significance to it. I drove by there today, again for player availability, and they're like starting to block off the front field of Allen Fieldhouse with like gates that people have to walk through, and they're getting everything set up, and
they're setting up the Disney lines.
Yeah, and there's exactly Disney. Kemper's like, Dad, let's go to, and I'm like, I don't want to mess with the lines. I mean, everything's getting set up inside Allen Fieldhouse today. They were getting stuff set up. John Rothstein, I think, is it from CBS, was there, and you know, they've got national guys in that are. I'm interested to see what's going on and how this is all going to play out. And I know, you know, Self and those guys are hoping that, you know, they have a big crowd. You know, they want to introduce those kids back into what college basketball is all about. So I expect to see a lot of late night is never a time to be serious. I mean, it's a time to have fun, to have skits and to let the kids be kids and, you know, let the fans kind of get a look at the team that they normally wouldn't get, you know, a side of the team that they normally wouldn't get to see. So I think it'll be fun, man. You know, they didn't give us a lot of info yet as far as skits and what's been planned, but I know it'll be fun. You sprinkle a little Run DMC and then the scrimmage at the end of the night. And, you know, it's a lot of new guys, a lot of new faces, but also some familiar faces, you know, some talent coming back, some experience. So I just normalcy, man. I want to see some normalcy. I want to see the smiles and the dunks and the threes and the laughs and the oops and all those things.
You talked about all the fun stuff that we all have missed and that we all really, of course, want to see on Friday night. But this is an important recruiting event every year. Give us the latest on who we can expect in the Fieldhouse on Friday night and why some of these guys could be, you know, key recruits in the next couple classes.
Yeah, this, Randy, this year is, and Coach Self talked about this the other day. I think it was Matt Tate that asked him, you know, what is it about late night and, you know, why is it such an emphasis put on the recruiting? And, you know, in years past, Randy, this would be a time where, you know, they would welcome in double digit recruits. They would have young kids. They would have seniors, official visitors, unofficial visitors. And this year, based on the list that I have so far, they're not bringing in a lot of kids. And Coach Self said, you know, this is an opportunity for us to showcase our program, but also spend time with the families, the guardians, the friends. And when you bring in double-digit kids, you can't do that. You can't have that face-to-face interaction with everybody. So, you know, obviously they've got the big name of the group is Johan Traore, 6'11", 230-pound power forward from Dream City Christian High School in Glendale, Arizona. And here's the thing. This is weird. So KU has been on. He's the number four ranked player in the class. Come in. He could be. I mean, he could come in and play this year. He's a guy that can score down low. He can step outside. You know, block shots, rebound. He's a guy that's going to one day, not long from now, play for a lot of money. He recently released his list of, I believe, 8 or 10 schools. Kansas was not on the list. You know, but the Kansas coach Townsend's been recruiting him as long as anybody. Coach Self. So, you know, they stayed on him, didn't give up, and he's coming in for an official visit this weekend. I mean, he's got and my feeling is, Randy, and I don't know if I've really said this publicly, I think the teams that he's considering, whether he's expanded his list or changed it or not, are going to have to go up against the professional ranks. I mean, this is a kid that not long ago was unranked. Now he's number four in America, and he could go anywhere and play. I mean, this is a kid, again, like I said, that's going to play for money soon. So that's certainly one to keep an eye on. I mean, the thing about Kansas is Kansas is a name brand. It doesn't have to sell itself. Everybody knows what you're going to get if you go to Kansas. Program. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're going to play a national schedule. You're going to play on TV every night. You know, everywhere you go, you're going to have the mark on your back. So that's one to watch. You know, obviously Grady Dick, who's been committed to Kansas for a while, is coming in. His running mate, former Bishop Mie star Mark Mitchell, is coming in 6'8", 210. Already visited back in, I believe, June. And I'm not telling anybody something they don't already know. It's a battle. I mean, Duke's up there. I know UCLA's up there. He's also going to visit, obviously, Kansas and Missouri. That's going to be a tough sell. Obviously, I know he and Grady are extremely tight. You know, obviously, AAU teammates, now high school teammates. But that's just got a feel of, hey, you know, I really like the University of Kansas, but if I have an opportunity to go to a Duke or a UCLA, you know, that's what I'm going to do. So that's obviously it's a big weekend in terms of the coaching staff getting some one-on-one time with Mark, you know, laying out a plan once again for how they envision him. And again, you know, it's never over until it's over. But I think anyone would say this, not just me, that going in this visit, they've got some work to do. So that's obviously, you know, you got Johan, you got Mark coming in. Those are two big visits. Then you got Zuby, and I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce his last name, who committed to Kansas back in this past summer, who's also going to be in for late night, coming in from Texas. And then you got a point guard from out in Chandler, Memphis, Tennessee, Christian Brothers, Chandler Jackson, extremely high on Kansas. He is coming in unofficially. So he'll be here Friday night. And then I imagine he might stick around for practice and then leave the next day. And I believe, Randy, as crazy as that sound, I think that rounds out the list. There was some talk that MJ Rice, who's also committed, was going to try to make it. That's not going to happen. So, yeah, it's a small group of guys. But obviously it's a big group in terms of potential what the staff.
Impact.
Absolutely. You're talking about Johan and you're talking about Mark Mitchell, two five-star guys. You know, you got a couple of guys that are already committed. And, you know, and then the point guard from Tennessee. So it's here's my thinking, Randy. I'm not done working the phones. I'm imagining that they'll have some other guys from around the area locally that will come in unofficially. But in terms of the big fish, those are the guys. I mean, you know, and Grady Dick could really be a huge help in terms of recruiting Mark Mitchell. I just think, you know, I think, and here's the thing with Duke, everybody knows about the brotherhood, whatever that means, wherever that came from. You know, I think that's a big attraction to Mark. I do. I think that, and playing out UCLA, and always got friends out there. You know, the UCLA brand, you know, we saw a guy, probably two decades ago or longer, John Rush, make that leap. And, you know, he went out that way from Bishop Miege.
He's at Pembroke Hill.
Pembroke Hill, correct, yes.
Pembroke to Paseo.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, so, you know, I think, and it's weird to me because, you know, I don't see a lot, I mean, maybe I do, maybe I don't, but I don't see a lot of guys like that are in Duke's backyard that are five-star guys that are leaving Duke or, you know, five-star guys from Kentucky that are leaving Kentucky. But he just might be a different guy. I mean, he may want to get out and experience something different. But I do know this. I know that Kansas is in the game. I know that it's not done yet, but I certainly think that there's some work to be done. And I think going in the visit, even if the staff could tell you that, even though they can't, if they could, I'm sure that they'd say the same thing. Work to be done with Mark Mitchell.
So if let's wrap this up. I know you've talked a lot about recruiting. If you had to point to, you know, a couple guys in the next two classes, who are the main targets that the Jayhawks are looking at right now in this class and the next one that the people should have their names ready and definitely in mind when they head to the field house on Friday?
For sure. Well, I think the first one obviously is Johan. You've got to find a way, you know, and again, I'm skeptical in terms of if he's going to play college ball or not. But if you can get him on campus, even for, hey, let me introduce you to this guy, Joel Embiid, who's turned out to have a pretty good career. You know, I'd show him that. You know, you've got Mark Mitchell is another guy, obviously, that, you know, you'd love to get in.
Well, and, you know, you've already, I know I've got you kind of backtracking because you've already kind of covered these guys. Tell me. Just name names. I'll let you get away easy here. Just name names. Give me two names in each class that if you had to pick right now, who do you think they get?
Oh, Randy.
Come on, Shay.
Oh, that's like gun to your head.
I haven't pushed you in a while. You've been taking it easy. You knew the first time you came back on the show, we're going to put you under the hot lights and make you
call
some things out. Give us some names.
Oh God. I'll go with oh boy.
Five.
Okay, hold on. Okay. Okay. Ernest, the big man from Orlando, Florida, Dr. Phillips, number 29th ranked player in America, Ernest, Uda Jr. I'll say him. And then I'll say Jordan Walsh, a small forward originally from Texas. He's spending the year at Link here in Branson, Missouri. I'll say those two in the 2022 class. 2023, we're looking down the road. I'll say Omaha Bilyeu, who's also a Branson originally from, I believe, spent the first 2 years of his career in Iowa, the number 7 ranked player in the class. And, oh, boy, Randy, this
pick
is
one now. Come on, five. Four.
Okay, hold on. I'll go. Jeremy Fierce Jr.,
point guard
from Indiana, number 41 ranked player in the class. Kansas recently offered. He plans to get down for a visit, and those will be the guys that I'll stick with. Dude, but listen, that's also subject to change.
I was gonna say, don't put any postscript. You've already made you staked your claim. You put your flag in the ground. We got the four names. That's our man Shay Wildebor on the basketball beat covering the Kansas Jayhawks. He'll be in the field house Friday night for Late Night in the Fog. Shay, thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey Randy, it was tricky, but it was fun. I'll see you Friday night.
Hey, we're gonna walk this way now.
Sounds good, brother. I'll be wearing my Adidas.
There you go. That's Shay Wildebor on the basketball beat for Jayhawk Slant. Now we're going to shift gears, move on over to the football side with our man, John Kirby. JK, tough loss to Duke on the road last Saturday. Looking back on the loss to the Blue Devils, what were your thoughts?
You know, Randy, I saw some good things. I really did.
I'm not the only one that thought that.
Listen, I know you're a typical fan. You know, probably turns the game off at some point, doesn't even watch it. It was on the ACC network. They get up, they see some highlights on the news, they see the box score. But they don't see that, you know, Kansas in the third quarter's in that game. They don't know that, you know, Duke's got a pretty nice offense. I was impressed with what they do. They speed you up. They're up-tempo. They've got the quarterback, you know, his athletic guy. The running back is good. His backup running back is pretty good. And in the third quarter, Kansas is right in that football game. You know, they were in the game in, you know, against Baylor, although it didn't feel right. They were still within a score of that one. Against Coastal Carolina, they were within a score in the third quarter in that game. So you sit there and you say, God, they're competing, right? Now, there's some areas they're just still undermanned. They don't match up well with some teams here and there at positions, but they're fighting. They're playing hard. You know, I thought the offense looked really good at times.
Agree.
I thought the offensive line played.
Offensive line made a lot of progress.
Much better. Much better. I saw some of those wide zones. I saw some of the Bostic get out on tackles. You know, he's an athletic guy. Ford, who's moved over, you know, where Grunhard's out right now. He's moved over to right guard. He looked good and did some good things. Receivers made plays. You know, Devin Neal with a 100-yard game. You know, Bean had some time to throw. That God, that is so big when he can sit back there. I know that's probably not his strength, is to sit back there and chuck balls around. I mean, you know, he's not a kid you probably want to throw the ball 40, 50 times in a game with. But, you know, if he sits back there and defenses have to respect his mobility and they have to play Kansas straight up, and if he can sit back there and have some time, you know, he showed he can hit on some vertical balls down the field. So, you know, the running backs ran hard. There was 500 yards of offense. So, you know, again, I saw some good things.
That just blew my mind when I heard them announce the numbers, because I was listening to the radio broadcast because I was working on Saturday. I heard this number and I just stopped. I was like, I couldn't remember the last time that happened.
Well, you know, they, again, and I don't know, you know, Duke personnel-wise defense, I'm not taking anything away against KU's offense, but I, you know, I don't know from here on out, you know, every defense Kansas probably sees is going to be better than Duke. So, you know, we'll see what happens in Ames Saturday night. But, you know, defensively, you know, the quarterback run game kind of drove you up a wall. You know, the Holmberg kid, the quarterback from Duke, you know, he ran untouched several times. And I guarantee you, they've showed that on film before. And I promise you that Borland, you know, had those guys coached up and ready for this. So, you know, I'm sure there were a few missed assignments, and they've got to be ready for that because Purdy can do the same thing from Iowa State. You know, second half, you know, they gave up 31 points. And at some point, I think, Randy, you know, they're rotating people in, okay? They still don't have a Big 12 depth, okay? That's gonna come down to recruiting and development and going to the portal over this next year or two. They're going to have to build that up. But, you know, they, you know, the second half of these games have been tough for them. I mentioned stopping the quarterback read that they didn't do. You know, again, there was missed tackles. And, you know, you got to cut back on that. And Leipold's addressed that. Borland's addressed that. You know, I had a coach once tell me that sometimes you don't get mad with missed tackles, because when you miss tackles, you at least had somebody there to make the tackle, okay?
Very true.
I've had coaches tell me what really makes you mad is when someone wasn't there to make the tackle, which happens, too, when you're not schemed up or coached up right. So, you know, God, they had the lead at halftime. I mean, you look back and there's some things that you're saying, okay, there are signs where you see improvement. And we talk about this all the time, right? Because, Randy, there's only two people you can ever go back, if you're old enough to remember it, there's only two people you can go back, and that's Mason and Mangino, to see
exactly
what they did. They both took over downtrodden programs. They were both in the cellars. They both built them up. And I remember Mason's first year. I remember Mangino's first year. And there were signs throughout the year that you saw guys in position to make plays. They weren't strong enough. There were guys that they weren't fast enough to take the right angles to make the tackle. You know, so the O-line was, you know, was learning new systems. And some of them weren't strong enough yet. So those things will come. But, you know, you've got to see some of the building blocks put in place. And like I said earlier, I really do think that each game, sometimes you look and say, okay, you see it. It's just you haven't really seen it for four quarters yet.
So you talk about not being able to sustain it necessarily for four quarters, and this weekend in Ames is, as an old friend of mine used to say, this is going to be a full meal deal. This is going to be a real tall order in a difficult fight to win for the Jayhawks on the road at Iowa State against the Cyclones. How do you see this thing playing out, Curb?
Yeah, Randy, I'll just be flat out honest. I don't like the matchup. Okay. I mean, there's a couple things in play here. Number one, I went back and I watched Iowa State and Baylor play last week. Somehow Baylor found a way to win the game. Iowa State was the better football team. Okay. I think they each might have had the same amount of turnovers. Iowa State outgained them by 200 yards. Iowa State, I want to say, in the second, third, and fourth quarter, I mean, Iowa State's defense really clamped down. Baylor only had like 300 yards offense, if that, total for the game. So, you know, Iowa State, I thought, was the more physical team. I just thought Iowa State was a better team, and sometimes a better team doesn't win. So here's the problem. Against Baylor, you left that game and you said it didn't matter. I don't care what Leipold and Kotelnicki and Borland and Schoonover, I don't know what the coordinators can do against somebody like Baylor, because sometimes you just show up and the other team beats you up, okay? They push you around, they beat you up, they run through you, they stop you, and that's what Baylor did. The bad thing for this matchup is I thought Iowa State was better. I thought they were more physical than Baylor. Now, combine that with the fact that you're going to Ames now on a team that was supposed to be top 10, and they're sitting there with two losses, both to very good teams, okay? They are going back home. They're going to be in front of their crowd at a 6 o'clock kickoff on national TV. They will be geeked up for this football game, okay? Iowa State is going to be ready. I mean, they will be ready to play. Campbell will have them ready to go. They are going to want to get this bad taste out of their mouth of you know, two early losses, a team that came in with high expectations. You know, I put this on the message board the other day. Randy, they had eight guys that were preseason all Big 12. Iowa State did. I think Oklahoma had eight. But Iowa State and Oklahoma were the top. Iowa State had five guys on offense. This is going to be a tough game for the Jayhawks linebackers, okay? You've got to worry about Hall at
Breece
running back.
Breece Hall.
Yeah, I mean, he's an All-American, okay? And then you've got a couple tight ends who are really good. I mean, the Kohler kid might be as good as it comes. So, I mean, God, it's going
to
be a...
I think Kohler's got a chance to be a first-round draft pick.
Yeah, he's legit. And the defense and the linebackers are going to have their hands full because Iowa State's going to do a lot of different things. And again, this isn't a game that I'm sitting here judging the Kansas football program by, okay? Because right now the odds are against them in this, just the way that the game's lining up. I mean, you know, night game, and you know the crowd's going to be into it. They're going to be ready to go. They're going to start tailgating about 5 hours before that thing. And Iowa State wants to get back on the winning track. I mean, you know, they haven't won a conference game. They're looking to do that. And I just think this is going to be a tough one. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I know we always pick a score. I'm not even going to pick a score. I just think that, you know, Iowa State is the better football team. They are going to be ready to play. And it's going to be a tough game for the Jayhawks. So now I'll make you pick a score.
Oh, no, I'm not picking a score either. I think you're exactly right. They are. This is the absolute wrong team at the absolute wrong time. They are angry. This is a wounded animal and an Iowa State team with a lot of pride that felt like they had a lot to play for coming into the season. Now they're reeling. They are going to come out like, I honestly expect to see them come out like a bunch of wild dogs, and Kansas is going to have to weather that emotional storm for a while. And we've seen they can stay in games for a half. I would love to see them keep this thing close through the third quarter, you know, make it a fight, make Iowa State really have to play them off their feet and keep this thing close. I don't think they have the horses to do it. Iowa State has the capacity to be very physical. They can run the football. They can dictate the pace. They have playmakers. Their defense is very, very good. And, you know, as the guy that always talks about local recruiting, Nathan Shieldhouse has stocked the Iowa State roster with a lot of guys from Kansas and Kansas City. I'm with you. This has the chance to be bad. So now that we have given all kinds of uplifting and encouraging thoughts about this weekend's game, Kirby, I know you said that things could be slow in regards to the 2022 class until we get some more information, really, not just about how the team is going to be handling the portal, but also potential changes with rules and things like that. With that in mind, anything new with recruiting since the last time we talked?
Well, yeah, you know, we had touched on the rules, and, you know, that's now going to be in play. Well, what they're going to do is they're going to give you your 25 initials that you get, and then they're going to give you seven more additionals for the people that you lose in the portal. So I think that's really big for Kansas because Randy, it is so hard, okay? It is so hard for them to build a program in this climate. I mean, you know, you can take kids in and you can develop them. And then once they develop, you know, other people start getting in their ear. And next thing you know, they're in the portal because someone, you know, bigger or what they perceive to be better is wanting them. And next thing you know, they're in the portal and they're gone. So that is a challenge. So these extra spots, I think, will really help KU because, you know, they're going to turn around and probably use the portal to their advantage. So I think it's a big deal. It's a good deal that this rule's been changed. I'm surprised it hasn't got as much play as I thought it would.
I thought there'd be a lot more conversation about it. It's just kind of like, oh, that happened. But you look at how crazy this season is. And of course, everything happening right now with the talks about expanding the playoff. This has kind of gotten pushed down on, you know, a little below the radar, I think.
Well, and you know, maybe some schools, okay, they don't, you know, in Alabama, maybe they just go, oh, hey, you know what, portal, whatever, we're loaded with players. Maybe some of the big schools that get a lot of the media attention don't see this as a big deal, but I do for Kansas. Hey, one thing, and I don't know where it's going to be. I don't know where they're going. I expect some of the Kansas coaches to be out up in Iowa on Friday night seeing some high school games. I know that they are recruiting the state of Iowa. And then, hey, keep an eye on this one, too. Next week, I think, will be interesting because it's a bye week. And just little things I'm hearing, I think the KU staff's going to be out all over the country next week. So that is going to be a lot of fun on the bye week. I'll be tracking them as well as I can, making calls, seeing where they're at, you know, talking to some recruits next week and finding out, you know, what their thoughts was on a Kansas coach visiting their school. You know, and Randy, I still say this. Kansas is in an evaluation period right now. Okay. They are still looking at their team. They're still trying to decide what they need. They're still deciding, you know, how many guys at this spot? Do we need any at this spot? You know, they're establishing kind of that new board that they're going to go out. Some of those could be portal kids. Some of them could be, you know, high school guys. They could go look at a few junior college names. I posted today, you know, they offered a junior college lineman. So, you know, the 2022 class is still kind of a work in progress, and it may be for the upcoming months until they can figure out what they need and then see who's available, whether it's high school ranks, JUCO, or the portal. You know, there were a couple decommits. Jalen Peoples decommitted. That was a tough one to take. You know, he is a good player. I haven't had a chance to talk to him, but, you know, he won't end up at Kansas. And then there was another commit, a decommit, Jacoby Chester. And I look at that more maybe as a just kind of two people coming together and deciding to figure out what's best down the road. So I don't know if that the Chester decommits as big as the Peoples was, but there's just a little extra tidbit just to throw in there to make sure I'm being accurate.
That is the final word from John Kirby on the recruiting trail, talking Kansas football and the Kansas Jayhawks as we head into this weekend's road matchup at Iowa State. Before that, we heard from Shea Wildebor about this Friday night and finally a return to late night in the fog. Also, Run DMC on their way to the fieldhouse. We would be remiss if we didn't tell you again that I'm the king of rock. There is none higher. Sucker MCs should call me sire. I'm Randy Withers. You've been listening to the latest edition of the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. We will talk with you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawkSlant.com.